Welcome to the Floor Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, and it's the 8th of May, and I am recording at 10:07 p.m., and that is British Summer Time here in London. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. And I will get onto that theme shortly. First, let's just have a quick look at what's going on here, because this has been sort of a soft week for stock markets until today. And we saw a little bit of better economic data. We had corrected overbought conditions a little more. And we know that everybody knows that that monetary accommodation is still quite positive. And that helped to firm stock markets today. So whereas yesterday, where all the Asia-Pacific markets that I could see were down on the day, pretty well most of them rallied. We had some tiny losses in Taiwan, South Korea, and Australia, but they were so small as to be insignificant. And we had some good gains. For instance, China, which showed its first sign of some new demand coming into the market following the shakeout that corrective phase from overbought conditions that we had seen recently. So the gains here ranged in Shanghai in China from the Shanghai Composite Index up over 2.25%. The Hang Seng up over 1%, the H-Share Index up over 2%. So those good gains. We also saw good gains in Australia, beg your pardon. I was up most of last night, but I'll hopefully be a little bit more coherent. Explain the overnight comment in a moment. But India firmed in here today. The Sensex index was up 1.90. Now that's been quite oversold in the short term, and so that looks like a recovery candidate to me. Recovery within its overall bull market, having pulled back to test slightly. Move below its 200-day moving average, but certainly not enough to be a major warning. China, I'm not so sure. Maybe we need a little bit more consolidation. It's a little bit tricky, a little bit more difficult to analyze. But technically, we had such big gains to the upside. I think that what looks attractive is the H shares and the Hang Seng index. I'm still a little uneasy about the A shares, which had become so overextended and have only seen, 3 or 4 days to the downside? Okay. Elsewhere, looking at the European indices, again, they've been under the cosh recently. Concerns over the whole Grexit situation generally, plus a consolidation of a very overbought condition that had been reached earlier this month, late last month. And so we saw some upper dynamics in here today. Switzerland, one of the best, up nearly 2.5%. But good gains here. Look, German DAX index up 2.65%. That's clear upward dynamic. First one that we've seen since this sharpish sell-off occurred. France was almost as good. The UK up 2.32% on that exciting general election news. More on that in a moment. Eurostox 50 up 2.62%. So this looks good. I could go on, but a lot of gains over 2% in the European stock markets, which are all firmer in here today. They have the nice factor of quantitative easing, QE, To help them along. They've corrected the overbought condition that we saw previously. So, given today's upward dynamics, I think I can say, well, I will say, we'd need to see closes beneath this week's lows to indicate some further pullback and l slightly lower consolidation before we see. See additional gains. Now, Wall Street, better economic data coming out today, and the Dow up nearly 1.5%, S&P 500 up 1.35, a little less for the Nasdaq, but well over 1% higher. So that's good action overall on Wall Street. And here's the bottom line. These indices, although the air on some of them is a little thinner at these levels, they're all still to the left of the rising 200-day moving averages. And that includes transports and the utilities, just about. In other words, we haven't seen any decisive downward breaks of the 200-day MAs. And so it's still in form. If it's still in form, you're not going to get too much of a panic on the part of U.S. investors. And you're not going to get a spillover panic affecting other stock markets. Now, I don't want to be complacent in here because we can see problems on the horizon, and we've been dealing with problems as they come up. But there was the sharp rally in the bond yields. That's, I think, that can unsettle markets as it did in the short term. But I don't think it's a big problem overall, not until they get considerably higher. And that's not an immediate prospect in my opinion. It's at best or worst, depending on your perspective, it's at best, I would say, a medium-term prospect. So, looking at all that, I think stock markets may be in for a little bit of a steadier period, and psychologically, we know what a battering the hedge funds have taken when they've been shorting this market, and they've generally lost on doing that. So, having seen today's upward dynamics, that might be a good omen for next week. I wouldn't be surprised. Okay, and looking at government bond markets, well, the yields have eased back here a little bit. And if we take the US 10-year, that's eased back to 2.146%. I said yesterday, and I think the day before, that it was due for a consolidation of those strong gains that we'd seen. If we just get a little shallow pullback in consolidation, we'll get a further move to the upside, and that indeed is certainly the longer term prospect, further move to the upside. Now, looking at the currencies in here, excuse me, US dollar index a little bit firmer in here today, up to 94.787. But the point is, it's taken 2 days, the last 2 days, to not quite recover the additional downward drop that we saw on Wednesday. So the point is there that the dynamics are still on the downside. The trend overall is still downwards. Among some of the other currencies in here, we see the euro eased a little bit, but it's at 1.1199. It wasn't all that long ago that people were making horrendously bearish forecasts for what the euro was going to do. But maybe not so, although I think I said earlier in the week, and I'll certainly say it again now, that I don't think the ECB would like to see the euro strengthen much further, because it's they've got a soft economy to deal with, and the last thing they want is a too strong a currency. Now, looking around, we can see sterling. That's up to 1.5455. That's up 2 cents in here today. Well, I'm sure you know what the news is, but there was a dramatically positive election for the UK economy. I feel that's certainly my view, dramatically positive, because you've got an overall majority for the Conservative government. That means you have a strong government in place rather than another coalition. And the UK, and I think just about, well, any government needs, or any country rather, needs a strong government overall. And if it's a capable, strong government, then that's usually a pretty positive thing. Now, the Conservative government, after 5 years in power, they are certainly more experienced. I think that there will be fewer roadblocks without the coalition, and so I think this is good for the UK. I think it's good for Europe. There will be a referendum, which Cameron had promised, and as to whether the UK retains its association here with the European Union. I meet a lot of people who say, well, they don't think that's a good idea. They don't think there should be a referendum. Well, hey, this is a democracy, and I think people have the right to have a vote on this topic. And I'm with George Osborne. If we get a reforming, positively economic improving European region, and that's more of a political decision to get some sensible economic policies than anything else, then it'd be good to remain associated with the euro. But right now, we don't have that. We have a euro that's limited by socialistic policies, and also there's a little bit of envy and attacks on the city, and also it's an expensive cost for the UK overall. And people say, yeah, but you've got this wide open European market. But I'm hoping that the strong Conservative government that we now have in place will lead to a little more common sense in terms of European policies towards the UK. In other words, stop interfering with the City of London and the economic system, in other words, and that would be okay. But if we haven't seen much of that so far, and if Europe's going to be a gradually sinking ship despite the heroic efforts of Mario Draghi at the ECB, but if it is going to be a deteriorating situation, then that's not in the UK's interests, in my opinion. Now, looking at Wall Street, well, I've pretty well already covered it on that economic news, so let me take up some other things here that I was talking about in the currencies. Yeah, the Indian rupee has weakened a little bit further, got up to 64 and backed off that level here today against the US dollar. So it's actually down slightly against the US dollar on the year to date, whereas it had been up until this up against the dollar until this week. And of course, the dollar has been soft, so the Indian rupee a little bit weaker. Again, it is an emerging economy, so it's not going to have a as strong an economy as some others. Chinese renminbi is reasonably firm. Looks like they're sort of pegging it close to the U.S. dollar here, in the certainly in the short to medium term. That's what they appear to be doing. Elsewhere, precious metals got a bounce in here today. Quite a reasonable bounce. Commodities generally were stronger. A little bit of an upward dynamic on the Continuous Commodity Index, that's CCI, here today. And I think, as I've said before, this CCI index and CRY, they suggest that, well, the pattern suggests that they're in base formation development phase. And that would suggest that we're going to see, if it's led by industrial commodities, and it is, that would suggest that the global economy is improving a little bit more, either that or that supply has been reduced, and usually it's a combination of both. Now, agricultural commodities a little bit firmer in here today, but they've been quite soft for the most part, generally. Now, looking further ahead, people are sort of pessimistic about the global economy. They have been for a long time. They don't understand why it's not improving. I've said, well, this is just what you have to expect if you've had a major credit crisis recession, particularly if it's been in the developed economies. And the reasons are obvious, but to repeat quickly, that you get massive deleveraging by corporations and by households, so that cuts spending, and it also cuts tax revenues to the government, which means less less government spending overall, and you get a sustained period of slow economic growth. And usually after a severe credit crisis, and this certainly was a severe credit crisis, a minimum of 6 years before you really start to pick up from that. And I think we are in the gradual pickup process and will remain so over the next few years. But meanwhile, that background is still one of generally accommodative monetary policies, and therefore you don't want to be making your stock market decisions based on what you think the GDP growth is going to be. You can get little swings and roundabouts on the basis of sentiment regarding the economies, but the big underlying factor, that by far the most important indicator to be looking at, really, as I've said over and over again in these audios, is what is happening with monetary policy. Now, we know we haven't got QE anymore in the U.S. market, but they haven't sold any of those bonds that they bought, and they're unlikely to, in my opinion. I think they'll just let them go through to expiration. But what we also know is that they're keeping interest rates really quite low, and I don't think we need to panic over the Fed agonizing about whether it can up the bank rate going from what is it, zero or close to it, to up a quarter of a percent in September, and maybe another quarter of a percent in December. That's no reason to cause a bear market. Although I have said repeatedly that we shouldn't fall off our chairs in surprise if we see a 10% correction here overall. Today's action suggests that that's not imminent for most stock markets, although we've just seen that for India. So I expect we'll get a little bit of choppy volatility. But are we going to get a big sustained blowout to the downside? Not a chance, I feel, in an uncertain world. Those odds are low given the positive conditions that we have on known factors here today, the positive monetary conditions overall that we have globally. And those monetary conditions are best for India, the European Union, and also for China. I'm just going to have a little cough here. Excuse me. Now, so what's the bigger, longer-term story here overall? Well, I've said over the next 3, possibly 3 to 4 years, that it would hardly be surprising to see a cyclical bear market or two over that over that period. But I think that's really the extent of risk. And so, what's a secular bear market? Well, 20% to 30%, depending on what market we're talking about. In other words, what the beta factor is. But more like 20, 25 for the US, a little bit more maybe for some of the others. But I'm talking about, do we see a couple of those over the next 3 or 4 years? Probably. Probably. Do we see a 50 to 70% decline? I think very unlikely, as I've already indicated. So I'd be again, this is an environment that favors equities. Where is the bubble? It's in bond markets. But again, Fed is not pushing up interest rates with any speed, nor is any other central bank. We also know that inflation pressures are generally under control. They will pick up over the lengthy medium term, though. Watch the bond market quite closely. That will be a good indicator going forward, and I do expect yields to rise, but will they rise very gradually? Or will they rise very suddenly? Well, they're going to rise very suddenly at some point in here. So we need to keep an eye on them overall. And I think that, they're risky. I'd much rather have equities. And I've said that for an awfully long time. I'm usually biased in that direction. But I just think that long-term bondholders, they're on a hiding to nothing over the longer term in here. 35-year bull market, don't overstay your welcome, is my point. Or put in some tough stops, or at least metal stops, on your positions so you don't get any profit erosion if you hold those positions overall. And in terms of so I don't like the bonds. I the bonds are, as you know, bonds I think will be deteriorating over the medium to longer term. In other words, yields will be pushing up. Every secular bull market, and 35 years, if that isn't a secular bull market, I don't know what is. But every secular bull market is followed by a bear market of some duration. That's hardly surprising. But it's what is surprising is how many people ignore that practically natural law of nature, physics. So when we get bond yields moving up, if they move up quickly, as happened over the last few weeks, then investors inevitably get a bit nervous. We've seen that. We can expect that, but they don't need to be too nervous overall because those moves upwards will indicating profit taking will also free up some capital that some of which, a little bit of which, will drift into stock markets overall. And then watch the share buybacks. As long as those share buybacks are close to matching new issues, we don't need to be too worried about supply problems in stock markets overall. I think the outlook for a secular bull market over the longer term, I'm talking about the next 20 years and or the longer term, is very, very good. And it'll be led by an accelerating rate of technological innovation, which is one of my forecasts over the last 5 years, and we see the evidence of that. And it's just going to go on and on and on. And corporations benefit most of all, or more than any others from that. The only negative from corporations for corporations and the accelerating rate of technological innovation is that it means a more rapid obsolescence for the companies that really don't keep up. But those that do keep up, again, they have a an exceptionally bright bright long-term future. That accelerated rate of technological innovation really replaces a lot of jobs that people may hold, so it's not so good for them. That's a deflationary pressure. Also keeps wages down. But if we take a cold-eyed look at global economies, it's a positive deflationary pressure, but obviously creates a lot of hardship for families that are affected by that. Now, so that accelerated rate of technological innovation, that's the biggest bull market driver, and it's going to go on and on in my opinion. Next big driver, lower energy costs in real terms, and we certainly have that. I think it's going to be a challenge for crude oil prices to get much above $80 to $90. That's really preferable, way preferable to the environment that we had just for most of last year and the 2 years before that here overall. And this is partly due to, or largely due to, the technologies that are actually available, not least solar energy coming on like gangbusters, is by far the most important in terms of potential, longer term potential of the renewables. So that's a big driver of bull markets, as is the as are the rising middle classes around the globe. So again, I feel we're in a period here where global GDP growth is we'll get more good news about global GDP growth in a gradual sort of sometimes two steps forward, one step back type of environment, but a long way from the deflationary negative deflationary of falling sales, production, and profits. That's positive deflationary environment here overall. Growing middle class, gradual economic recovery. That's good news until economic recovery creates inflationary pressures, and then you get the monetary tightening, and that's what that's the biggest cause of bear markets. And that's just not on the immediate horizon. So that, but the point I'm making in talking about the secular bull market is that it will be punctuated by a few bear markets. That's always the case. You think of 1982 up to 99, 2000, that last secular bull market. Well, the most frightening of the bear markets that we had during that period was the 87 crash, although it looks only like a blip on the screen when you look at the long-term charts here today. Okay, and in terms of well, I think that bond investors certainly have to worry about a bear market, as I've already said, so I won't overstay on that point. Looking at currency markets, I think we're better off to see the dollar's rally peaked. I think this is a peak. I think this is a lengthy medium-term correction. But the longer-term potential for the U.S. dollar is for it to move higher, and that's because of the USA's strong position in terms of technology and also in terms of its ability to produce energy, a lot more energy, certainly anytime energy prices start to become a little bit expensive. And remember those lower energy prices, that's an absolutely massive transfer of wealth from the oil producing countries to all the individuals and corporations within the oil consuming nations. And that will be a driver of this secular bull market as well. Okay, what about commodity markets? There's always interest in the precious metals sector. My feeling is the valuations are reasonably attractive in here at current levels, but you don't have any yield with those investments. And there, I regard them as more speculative at this stage. You do have some catch-up recovery move potential and a bit of yield with some of the commodity shares. I think the bigger ones are the safer ones, and of course, you often the norm in global long-term stock market cycles is that as a bull market is getting in equities is getting quite long in the tooth, that you get a because global economies are moving closer and closer to a synchronized period of good economic growth. That's when you usually get commodity shares taking off to the upside. And we're not there yet, but you know, it's we can see that on the distant horizon. We can see that potential. And there's some attractive yielders in that's in the commodities sector among big companies. I'm talking about the Rios and BHPs of course. Now, elsewhere, agricultural commodities, the big variable is production, always. And what we have had for the in the last couple of years is reasonably good growing conditions around the world. And that has led to the lower commodity prices. That helps to keep inflation low as well. But I would expect, as global GDP growth picks up, that we'll see a little bit of pressure there as well, and even more so in the industrial commodities overall. Is there anything else to mention in here? I don't think so. So I don't want to ramble on here. I will just say interesting week, particularly if you are a UK supporter of the Conservative Party, and that's the last I'll say on that here. And meanwhile, have a fantastic weekend. All the very best to all of you.